And welcome into Gator Bites on the 1010XL.com podcast network, also being simulcast on the Florida Gator 1010XL Facebook page. Today's Gator podcast is brought to you by Southeast Orthopedic Specialists. They're Northeast Florida's leading orthopedic center, providing an unparalleled level of care across numerous locations in both Jacksonville and St. Augustine. That includes Riverside, Northside, the Southside, the Beaches, Fleming Island, and St. John's. He is Denny Thompson. I'm the hacker, Ryan Green. Denny, it's a loss last week, but man alive, we're 4 days removed now. Doesn't really feel like a loss. It's odd after you lose a home game to a conference rival. Still a lot of very good feelings in Gator Nation about the way the game turned out against Alabama.
Yeah, the macho thing to do is say there's no such thing as a moral victory. The reality is none of us got finished watching that game and was angry.
Right.
Like maybe disappointed, maybe like, oh, you had a chance. But nobody was angry. So in my mind, that's a moral victory. Like just the and we'll get into all of it, but just the way that Dan Mullen has proven he's not scared of Nick Saban.
No.
He's not scared of going down 18 to Nick Saban. He's not like his more importantly, his team's not scared of Alabama. That logo for Alabama means nothing to the Florida players. It's no different than any other logo. And they were more physical than Alabama, and they really did whatever they wanted to do to Alabama. And I think I've got some hot takes defensively on Florida that Gator fans may or may not like to hear, by the way.
Well, let's start with the big uglies, because last year in Atlanta, that was a vertical passing game that kept you in the game. It was Kyle Pitts, it was Kadarius Toney, it was Trevon Grimes. Obviously, Trask throwing the ball. You did not match up on the line of scrimmage with Alabama in December. What happened in 9 months? Because last Saturday, for the last 2.5 to 3 quarters of that game, Florida dominated the line of scrimmage on both the O-line and D-line against the Alabama Crimson Tide. Quite frankly, I was shocked by that.
Yeah, I think there's reason to be excited. There's also reason to just go, hold on now, wait a second. Because put yourself in Alabama's shoes for a second. They didn't really know what Florida was going to do.
Right.
And so the great equalizer of any sport or anything is having to think about things before you do them, before you react. Florida knows where they're going. Alabama doesn't know where they're going. Like, there's not a lot of film on what Florida did on Saturday. And so I think that contributed a little bit to Florida being able to be so dominant up front. But at the same time, there were obvious passing downs. There were obvious running plays. There were things like that where Florida still dominated.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, I mean, I think a ton of credit goes out to Savage. And I am, you know, fully on, and I've always been, but I'm even more so fully on the Dan Mullen, pay him whatever he wants, give him whatever he wants, train. So that you're not, you know, you don't have a coach in search in the next decade, because this is your dude and this is the guy that's going to bring you to whatever level it is that you think Florida can get to.
You've been known throughout Jacksonville and really throughout the southeastern part of the country the last few weeks as the Anthony Richardson guy.
Right.
Let me ask you about Emory Jones, mm-hmm. a guy you have not worked with near as extensive as Anthony, but you have worked with Emory Jones in the past. Of course, Denny, with what he does at 6 points, almost feel like I have to repeat that for new viewers. Denny works with a lot of these quarterbacks like Anthony Richardson for the last 4 years, but you've also spent time working with Emory. Emory Jones, I thought, played well. Now, there were certainly some issues, a couple of bad picks early on, but when he settled into the game, I think you left that game, Denny, feeling very good about Emory Jones.
Yeah, I mean, my opinion of Emory hasn't changed. I think he's a really good quarterback. I think if you put him in anywhere, he's probably going to play to the talent that he has around him, which I think we're seeing a little bit of that. And Florida has decent talent around him. But he is a top five in the SEC quarterback. He starts on 90% of the teams across the country. Here's the thing about Emory, and Emory is a very even keel, laid back guy. Like, he just, you like being around Emory. He doesn't get too high. He doesn't get too low. The guys like him. But more importantly, that's just who he is. So when he has a game, he throws a pick. You don't see Emory hang his head. You don't worry about Emory having picks and bunches. He's going to come back out. He's got a short memory. And that's just like I said, kind of the way he is as a person. So it didn't surprise me. What did surprise me a little bit is there was a level of like dog in Emery on Saturday that I don't think we've seen before. When you gave him the whole game, he didn't have to worry about 15 behind him.
Right.
As the game progressed, you could just tell all these guys were competitive, but Emery wanted it more and more and more and more. And as it looked like, oh, crap, we got a chance to win. We'll talk about the two-point play in a second. Because the Emery's key in that, it just seemed like his play went higher and higher and higher. It didn't stay the same. It was, I don't know about you, but watching the game, in the fourth quarter, I had a ton of confidence. And every time that Emery dropped back to pass, it was going to be a good play.
No, I agree. And look, we talked about it the entire offseason, the running back room for Florida, whether it was Naquan Wright, Malik Davis, Damian Pierce, the two transfers, Lingard and Bowman. It's one thing to talk about it and to think they're going to be good. It's another thing to put 200-plus rushing yards on Alabama. I mean, everything we talked about this offseason kind of came to fruition on Saturday. Alabama, again, it sounds like Florida won the game. It's odd, and we'll get to that whole situation in a moment. Alabama could not stop the Gator ground attack in the second half.
No, I mean, Florida made it look easy. It's not like they were that hard-fought yards. They weren't getting touched for 4, 5, 6 yards. Again, great job to the offensive line. Great job to Coach Hevesy, Mullen, Emery, all those guys on putting together a game plan that had Alabama on skates.
Now, the two-point play, obviously the exception. Alabama wins the game 31-29. You mentioned the two-point play that was not successful. I'll give Mullen a thumbs up in this regard. I like the fact that they ran the ball. You've been running the ball the entire second half. I've heard people say do a quarterback rollout, give him a run-pass option, do a straight back, you know, drop 5 wide receiver pattern, whatever. No, running the ball was working. Alabama could not stop it. I have no problem with the call. The way it was executed obviously left a little bit to be desired.
Okay, you're talking about with the exchange?
Yeah.
Okay, that's the way it's designed. So they ran that 2 or 3 times. And the way that's designed, it's a give. But they're in order to get numbers, they're leaving the end free.
Mm-hmm.
And so the quarterback by design is supposed to make it look like that. There's a lot of practice that actually goes into that to keep that end frozen. It was actually like, I thought, I love the play call. I love everything about it. The one thing that people say is, well, it's kind of holding up the running back, and maybe so. But the thought is, we're on the 3-yard line. We've got to make a play. They're going to have numbers if our quarterback doesn't run. Quarterback running is the only way that you're 11-on-11 in football, right? Or the quarterback blocking, or the quarterback reading because you're taking somebody out. So, I mean, the execution is what I wanted to get to because that's actually the way the play is designed. And as you go through college football this year, you're going to start to see more and more and more of that, of design gives that frees that defensive end. It's kind of a, I don't want to call it a new trend because it's not going to hop on like that, but you'll see it. You'll see other teams running that. I've seen it practiced at 5 or 6 different schools.
I mean, Wake Forest gashed Florida State with basically the same type deal. The quarterback has the ball, and it looks like he and the running back are having a shaking hands conversation for 2 or 3 seconds until the running back actually takes it across the line of scrimmage. FSU couldn't stop it against Wake Forest.
Yeah, it's a really good play design, X's and O's wise. It looks a little shaky. It looks a little weird because we haven't seen it before. But like I said, I mean, I've been at multiple schools practices throughout the country, and I've seen it at just about all of them. So the first time I saw it, I was like, what is that?
Yeah.
And then when somebody explained it to me, I'm like, oh, okay, that's actually pretty smart.
All right, we've got to look forward, but I want to talk about the defense.
Well, do we really?
Well, we do, because there's a lot to digest about what happened and what it could mean moving forward. Really quick on the defense. You tell me. You've been a high school coach, coordinator. You work with all these college and NFL quarterbacks now. From a coaching standpoint, defensively, how can you look as bad as Florida looked in the first quarter? Alabama was going through them like a hot knife through butter. And then all of a sudden, I don't know what switched for Grantham and the defensive staff, but after Alabama got that 21st point, it was a drastically different game.
So I tweeted this out. The first quarter, Grantham called a great game. Awesome game.
Called a great game.
Awesome.
Wow.
If you go back and you watch that game, they knew where Alabama was going every time. And there were guys there.
Missing tackles, though.
That's all it was. And it wasn't like last year where the tackles were missed 8 yards up the field. There were tackles missed right at the line of scrimmage, behind the line of scrimmage, stuff like that. And the thought that I had was, okay, that's 5-star versus 3-star. And you get a guy in space, and that's what Alabama was doing, was, okay, how do we isolate our guys in space against their guys? You get a guy in space, he's hard to tackle, and that's where they were winning. But anytime they didn't get a guy in space, Florida was shellacking them, right? All that happened, the only thing that happened, is the Florida players adjusted to the speed and started making plays.
Mm-hmm.
And you can count on one hand the number of missed tackles after the first quarter, where in the first quarter there was like 10 of them, right? That's the only thing that happened. I thought defensively from a coaching perspective, awesome. As it almost blueprint to how you want to play Alabama with Bryce Young. A lot of time put in that game plan, and I thought as far as execution, if you take the tackling away, which is part of it, but where people were supposed to be, where people were supposed to line up, all that kind of stuff, A+.
Today's Gator Bites podcast is brought to you by Southeast Orthopedic Specialist for the highest quality care. You can rely on Southeast Orthopedic Specialist for any orthopedic injury or concern. You can log on to their website by going to se-ortho.com, and you can listen for Southeast Orthopedic Specialist, the good doctor, Kevin Murphy, on Thursday mornings in the 7 o'clock hour, with Jeff and Dan right here on 1010XL for his weekly analysis of injuries in sports. We've spent the entire first half of the podcast, we're recording this on Wednesday, looking back at last week. Tennessee comes in 3 days. Tennessee's not a good football team, all right? I'm not going to sit here and try to make the argument that they're a good football team, because they're not. Any potential hangover that it was a good loss, Florida football's back, the swamp was rocking, now 7 days later, you got to put it all back together and have another rivalry game. Tennessee looks at this as a rivalry, even if Florida necessarily doesn't anymore. Tennessee's not going to care that you look good in a loss to Alabama. They're coming to Gainesville to win on Saturday night. The players are human. Any potential hangover effect?
No, none, none. And I think Tennessee does care. I think the Tennessee players are looking at this like, ah, crap. I mean, they've been blown out by Alabama in recent history. They've seen what Alabama does. They know that they thought that they were closer to Florida than they were to Alabama, and now they watch that game, and they're like, well, damn, we're miles apart from both of them.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing that we didn't mention about Alabama, you just made mention to it, that needs to carry over, is that atmosphere. And I don't mean from like a look at how loud our stadium is standpoint. I mean, I know a lot of the recruits that were there, they had a freaking blast.
On social media, it was blowing up, particularly Tom Petty going to the fourth.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if any of those kids actually know who Tom Petty is, which I kind of thought it's funny, but just the atmosphere and everything going with it.
Even the Alabama beat writers.
Yeah.
Like, everybody had a blast, and that also is true for the football team, right? So, you're not going to replicate that every week. The fans have more of a hangover than the players do from week to week, because the fans don't get treatment and the players do, right? But it's one of those things where I think Tennessee's walking into an impossible situation for them. They're walking into a team full of confidence, but also a little bit pissed off that they lost, with 90,000 fans who remember now how fun that stadium can be.
And I can't remember the last time, maybe you know, Florida, when they go to Knoxville, it's usually at night. The last time Tennessee came to Gainesville, when it was at night, a lot of 3:30
games. Is it
at
night?
It's a 7 o'clock kick.
They don't have a prayer. This is going to be, I didn't even know that. I may go. I may actually go.
7 o'clock ESPN.
Tennessee's about to get blown out. God bless you, Tennessee.
It's a 20.5 point line.
Get the moonshine and the whiskey ready. You're going to need it.
Josh Heupel's a good coach. They've gotten 2 wins against Western Kentucky and Tennessee Tech. They played Pitt tough, and you think, well, okay. And then Pitt turns right around and loses to Western Michigan. So, obviously, Tennessee is a ways off. Florida, clearly the better players. But I imagine Tennessee looks at a game like this and the Georgia game and the Alabama game as, like, their bowl game, their Super Bowl, if you will. I have no doubt Tennessee will be excited to play, They just don't have the talent that Florida does.
Well, that's right. I mean, there's a lot of us that can look at a lot of things and go, man, yeah, I want to do this, but we don't have the skill set to do it. We don't have the talent to do it, and that's the issue. It's kind of where, you know, FSU is right now.
Oof.
I think Heupel is a good coach, just like I think Mike Norvell is a good coach. The reality is the cats aren't there. You're playing major college football with a FCS type of roster. And you've had to patch that together at best. It's not even guys that were really recruited to Tennessee. So I just, unless Florida does the whole mess around and let them stay in it and, you know, into the third quarter, which I don't think is the case. I think Florida steps on their neck early. Unless that's the case, I would almost give the 20.
You're pretty big into the recruiting game. You have a lot of guys that go to play big time college football that I'm sure get recruited by a school like Tennessee. I mean, we're well over a decade. I mean, heck, you can go back probably 15 years since Tennessee was really relevant.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you thought when Fulmer left, there would be some down years, the Lane Kiffin fiasco. Then they go and get Dooley. That didn't work out. Then Butch Jones. That didn't work out. Jeremy Pruitt. Now they're on to Josh Heupel. I mean, what are they doing wrong in Knoxville to not be able to turn this thing around?
It's a great question. I don't know. I mean, their facilities are above average. They're not, you know, awesome, but they're better than Florida's right now. You know, I don't know. As I knew, you know, where you were going when you started that question, I just started thinking about when's the last time we had a quarterback that seriously considered Tennessee, and that was Nate Peterman.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And I mean,
it's a long time ago.
Yeah, we signed 12 to 15 major D1 guys every year, and I can't remember. Even when I've had really good friends on staff at Tennessee, I cannot remember a single quarterback mentioning Tennessee to me. So I don't know if it's what you said, if it's just they haven't been relevant in so long that T doesn't mean anything to this generation if you live down here. But, you know, I can think I've got multiple kids in Tennessee right now.
The one
that they talk about Georgia and Arkansas.
Well, that's the one thing. The one thing that they're kind of boxed in. You can't go to Georgia and get guys anymore like you could, you know, 20 years ago because Kirby's got Georgia locked down. You can't go to South Carolina and get kids anymore because Dabo Swinney has got South Carolina locked down. Tennessee really never did come to Florida all that much. Alabama kids aren't going to Tennessee. Why would they when you got Auburn and Alabama there? So Tennessee, you got to rely on your in-state kids, and we talk about high school football in the Memphis state of Tennessee.
Memphis is crushing it.
Right. I mean, it's a tough recruiting sell right now.
It is, especially when you look at the sleeping giant. I mean, the absolute beast that Arkansas is right now. And people are like, huh? Because all of what you just said about Tennessee is true for Arkansas, except where Arkansas is the richest part of the country.
Mm-hmm.
People don't realize Tyson Chicken, Walmart, Dillard's, J.B. Hunt, all based in there. And in today's NIL world, I'm telling our guys, you need to make Arkansas one of your visits. Because if they want to, not Arkansas, the university, but the fans, they can make you millionaires. And it's a beautiful campus with amazing facilities. And so now if you're Tennessee, you're fighting that. And you're fighting Missouri, who's a better program than you.
Yeah.
Right? It's just, it's an uphill battle for them. It's going to take... They've got to find their Urban Meyer. They've got to find their guy that is so electric and so different than everybody else that he's able to go in living rooms and go, and moms and dads are able to go, yeah, you know what? I remember Tennessee. You need to go play for that dude.
Well, in 20 years, it's unfathomable to think Kentucky would get a kid over Tennessee. If you're a kid getting recruited by Kentucky and Tennessee right now, you're probably going to Kentucky, are you not?
Kentucky's a 10 times better program right
now. Yeah, it's unreal. By the way, speaking of Arkansas, promotion here for XL Primetime. We have Sam Pittman coming on Wednesday afternoon. So
amazing
this afternoon.
Guy.
Yeah.
Awesome dude doing great work. I got to know him when he was at Georgia. He's going to do great things. Kendall Briles crushing it. I'm from Arkansas, so I always keep an eye on him. He's born in Louisiana, raised in Arkansas, and I love what they look like up there.
Today's Gator Podcast is brought to you by Southeast Orthopedic Specialist. They're Northeast Florida's leading orthopedic center, providing an unparalleled level of care across numerous locations in both Jacksonville and St. Augustine. That includes Riverside, Northside, the Southside, the Beaches, Fleming Island, and St. John's. All right, for Gator fans watching right now, for Gator fans listening right now, it's pretty simple. If you want a shot at Alabama again, assuming nothing weird happens out west and Alabama wins the West, you have to win the rest of your games. All games matter. It's a loss last week, no question. But Florida didn't fall any in the polls, and right in front of them is pretty clear. If they win 9 consecutive games, which would include big tests, Kentucky, LSU, Georgia, etc., you will see Alabama again in Atlanta for the right to go to the college football playoff. Translation, everything's right in front of you. But obviously, it's going to be tough to beat teams like Georgia, like Kentucky, maybe LSU, because it's in Baton Rouge. How confident should Gator fans be, based on last week against Alabama, that they could see the Tide again in a couple of months?
Fairly confident. I mean, I think you want to continue to see growth. You want to see what the quarterback position turns into. You want to see what Anthony Richardson, how long it takes him to get healthy, what he looks like against SEC competition and not USF, FAU.
You expect to see him Saturday night?
I have no clue. That's the God honest truth. I really don't know.
Because last week, obviously, was a giant smokescreen coming out of Gainesville.
Yeah. If you listen Friday, I actually gave it away. I was like, somebody asked if I was going. I'm like, no, I'm not going.
Dang,
I shouldn't have said that. But no.
So you knew he wasn't going to play?
I knew the odds were – I knew they were leaning that way.
Right.
Right? I mean, you can't have a soft tissue issue that has happened before and just ignore it. Right? It needs to be rehabbed. Now, I don't know – I have no idea where he's at this week. None. I haven't talked to anybody down there. He and I texted like Sunday night. But I mean, you got to, if he is what we think he is, and he is, by the way, I'm just saying that for all of y'all, then all of a sudden you start looking at games like Kentucky and you start looking at games like LSU and you go, well, wait a second. They can't stop him. Like, so if, I mean, how do we lose those games? And so it becomes, you know, a defensive thing.
So that's why to me, I don't play him against Tennessee. I don't think you need him against Tennessee. Give him as much rest as you can because you might need him in the Commonwealth next week against Kentucky.
He needs to take more snaps. That's the one thing.
Yeah.
He needs to take more snaps. They need to put more film of him doing different things up. That needs to happen. But I don't disagree with you on that.
Real quick, I want to go over a couple of games. I know you got to go do radio here in about 5 minutes. Florida State and Miami. All three major three schools in the state lost last week. There are different types of losses. Florida's loss was looked at as a moral victory. I don't know what that was in Winston-Salem, North Carolina last week. I don't know what that was in Coral Gables last week. Your quick thoughts, Cliff Notes version, on where Miami and Florida State are right now.
Well, I'll be completely upfront and honest with you and tell you that I did not watch a single snap of either game. And I cannot imagine a scenario until Florida State plays Florida that I will watch a single snap of either one of those programs because I don't like to watch bad football.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the issue in Tallahassee, I'm much closer with those guys than I am Coral Gables. Much closer.
They like you in Miami. You're a big deal down there.
Yeah, not at all. The issue there is just talent. The issue there is you can scheme up whatever you want to scheme up. It's just a deficiency of talent in Tallahassee right now, and that's tough. Even with Wake Forest. Like, that's how far that has gone. I think in both scenarios, they need to hang tight, though.
Mm-hmm.
I think in both scenarios, it's not time for a coaching change. It's not time for coordinator changes. It's not time for anything.
I think Manny's in more trouble in Coral Gables, and I'll tell you why. We have a former Hurricane on our show in Leon Searcy. You got a lot of former really popular Hurricanes, obviously. There's some chatter among the big-time Hurricanes.
Here's the reality, though. You can't talk to Hurricane fans without this. Because Hurricane fans think they're a top 15 job. They're not.
Yeah.
You're not getting somebody from Oregon. You're not getting somebody from Cincinnati.
You get somebody from Ole Miss?
No.
You don't think Lane would leave?
Absolutely not. Not for Miami. No. If Lane leaves, it's going to be big. Right? It's just you're so behind the eight ball down there that I just don't think. I mean, Hacker, we're in 2021. And they have to travel how far to go to games? How far is Hard Rock from Coral Gables?
No, it's a good distance.
Think about that.
Yeah, no, you're right.
We're in 2021, and a program that wants to tell us that they are a top 15 program doesn't. It's not even an on-campus stadium. It's not even the same city.
Yeah.
Right? So, I mean, it's just the resources aren't there to compete right now at Miami. And so that's what I'm saying. Like, what you have to do is go find the guy. You have to go make a pitch to somebody like Jamie Chadwell at Coastal Carolina. you have to trust that he's going to be the one. I know Jamie, and I don't think he would go to Miami. But you have to go find the guy at that FCS level that's the next dude. You're not going to take Memphis's coach. You're not going to take Cincinnati's coach. Your grass isn't greener.
They're not going to fire Norvell in Tallahassee. If they go 2-10, though, or 3-9, which is definitely realistic at this point, say they go 3-9, that would mean 6-15
mm-hmm.
in 21 games.
Mm-hmm.
Taggart went 9-12 and got fired.
Mm-hmm.
That's a bad deal going on right now over there.
Yeah, I'm a big believer in this right now, especially in Florida State's case. You can't look at the past in this. Don't compare Taggart. Don't compare Bowden. Don't compare Jimbo. If you feel like you have the right guy in Norvell, which he checks every box with the exception of the win column box, which is a big one.
Yeah, he's 3-9.
But he checks every box. He's recruiting really well, and those guys really, really like it there. Travis Hunter's going there. Travis Hunter is going there. I talked to Travis at the Notre Dame game. Travis Hunter's going there. There's for some reason, I don't know, but for some reason, there's a bunch of guys who aren't committed who still really like Florida State, and they really like Mike Norvell. And I know Mike, and he is a likable guy. He is a really good dude. I'm telling you, don't look at the past. If you believe that's your guy, commit to him for at least two more years after this one.
Rapid fire. Georgia, Vanderbilt. Georgia has no issue with them, assuming.
Come on.
LSU, Mississippi State.
I don't even talk about LSU got to figure out what they are.
Yeah.
Quick.
Mississippi State could beat them. It's in Starkville.
Yeah, Eddie O may be on his way out.
Tennessee, Florida, we'll get to in a moment. Kentucky, South Carolina.
Kentucky rolls. South Carolina's bad.
Kentucky survived Chattanooga last week.
Yeah, I don't. Will Levis is much better than what he showed. They will throttle South Carolina.
Game of the week, A&M at Arkansas.
Yeah, that is a huge game. Southwest Conference, old days, back-to-back weeks. Texas A&M, right, for Arkansas.
Yeah.
Right? Those were old rivalries way back. Means a ton. Is this game in Cowboy Stadium? Is that where this is?
I believe so, yep.
It normally is. I'm very intrigued by that. I think Arkansas wins that game just because A&M doesn't have the quarterback that they thought they were going to have.
It's two top 15 teams. And then finally, Tennessee, Florida. Give me a score.
I'm going to go 49-14.
So it's a woodshed game.
No, there needs to be a field goal. I'm going to go 49-17.
Yeah. Gators. And look, next week, it's going to be much tougher. Kentucky's probably going to be undefeated. That game's probably going to be at night. It is going to be at night. They're going to be fired up for Florida coming up there. They haven't beaten Florida in Lexington since Reagan was president.
And the last two times that they were in Lexington, Kentucky gave it away.
Yeah. Yeah. So
gave it away.
Beat Tennessee and then get ready quickly for what could be a really interesting contest next week against the Kentucky Wildcats. He is Denny Thompson. You get him all over the 1010XL airwaves, including us on XL Primetime. We have Denny every Thursday. I'm the hacker, Ryan Green. Thank you guys for watching and listening to Gator Bites. We'll be back here next week to preview Florida and Kentucky on 1010XL.com and on the Florida Gator 1010XL Facebook page.